Hey everybody, my name is Davis Buchanan, and I want to welcome you to the podcast where we discuss famous people and the names they share with people who might actually deserve to be the famous one. That's right, this is I'm Not Adam West, and joining me as always is my co-host, Adam West. Hey Adam, what's going on? How you doing?
Good, man. Hey.
Hey, what's up?
I see you.
That was a real life high five, people. We're recording in the same room this week.
This is crazy. Yeah, we've, for those who don't know, we record in basically different cities every time we've done the podcast. And so now we're just happen to both be in Austin. So getting to record together and see how this goes. So
maybe for once we won't talk over each other. We won't have awkward pauses. Now that we can actually look at each other like human beings and do this podcast.
Yeah. I didn't do this for the human interaction, but it is a nice touch.
So. No, we never do anything for human interaction. We avoid people at all costs. We lock ourselves in dark rooms and get out microphones, and that's how we interact with the world.
And it works great, too. So.
It just works out just fine. What have you been up to?
Oh, you know, just living life. I had another improv show last night. It went really well, okay. I think. It was super hot in there. So as the show went on, we were on for about, had a 20 minute set. And I noticed gradually throughout, and you can tell in pictures, like the sweat increased.
It's getting sweatier
and
sweatier.
I'm just naturally a sweaty guy. So like, it was fun and I wasn't thinking about it, but at the end of the show, I was like, wow, I'm really sweaty. And I don't know why that is. So,
that's awesome. But 20 minute set is a long set to do for improv though.
Yeah. It's kind of thrown on to us at the last second. We thought we were going to do a little shorter, but you know, crew stepped up and we're like, yeah, why not? Let's play around some more. And
nice.
So,
I'm glad. What was your favorite like bit from the show? What was your favorite moment or bit or thing y'all did?
Man, it's all kind of a blur, honestly.
Yeah, that's
but
fair.
My personal one that everyone liked the most, it's what's called a walk on. It's basically when you walk onto the scene, into the scene that's happening, and then you add to it and then you leave.
Yeah.
So it's like you need like two sentences or something and walk off the stage.
Right.
And so the scene was a teacher was flirting with her student and I walked in and said, I thought I was your favorite student. It was just like very much like if you would have seen it happening, like it's like happening in your mind, you're glad somebody did it on stage. And I just left. And so everyone
that's good.
Thought that like, oh, that's great. You just knew when to do it and you left. And so
super fun.
The weird thing about improv sometimes is like less is always more, you know? So just keeping it simple.
That's good. That's a good life rule, Adam. Yeah. I think that's just a good general principle to live by.
Yeah. So it was fun. I can't wait to do the next one. So what about you, man? How's life on your end?
Yeah, life's good. Still doing camp. Again, this is week 9 of 11 for camp. I'm in Austin this week. I was actually at the same church doing camp 2 weeks ago. And so it's cool to be back at the same church. I've been here. This is my 6th week to do camp at this church over the course of the last 3 years. So we're experts at this point. It's been great. It's been fun to be back in Austin. I just love Austin. I like being here. The only thing that is not fun about Austin is the traffic. I mean, we experienced this earlier with Chick-fil-A, and it was the busiest Chick-fil-A I've ever been in. And so traffic aside, Austin's super fun to be in, except for, well, I guess, traffic and the heat, the horrible, miserable heat. It was 109 degrees on Monday, 3 days ago at the time of recording. And so it was miserable, but it's been great to be here. Like I said, doing camp has been fun. It will be good when camp is over. We're going on vacation, Laney and I, so that'll be really fun, but doing well. So it's been good.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Adam, I have a question for you.
Sure.
What do car production, the peppered moth, and Pittsburgh all have in common?
Oh, man. If I had to guess in the dark, it would have to be Henry Ford.
How did you know? Yeah. You're so good at guessing these random things put together. How did you know it was Henry Ford?
I don't know, man. It just hits me. So, yes, Henry Ford is our person of the day. So kind of an interesting guy and in a lot of ways, not always the best ways, but interesting.
Correct.
Nonetheless. So for those who don't know Henry Ford / I guess don't know a lot about automobiles
or really about anything, if you don't know Henry Ford, you've been living in the dark for a while now.
Quite a while. So Henry Ford, born in 1863, is kind of credited for the modern day car.
Right.
Like he didn't make the first car. He didn't make the first assembly.
Yeah.
But basically revolutionized how they work.
Okay.
So he started the Ford Motor Company.
Right.
And he is a basically started the best rendition of a mass produced car. And okay. So the first car that was mass produced is known as the Ford Model T.
Right.
I'm not the most into cars, but I love the Ford Model T. Okay. I've always thought it was a really neat car. Cool. And so it's kind of known as, yeah, the first affordable middle class car. Interesting facts about the Ford Model T, which I didn't know about before. Actually, so it's called the Ford Model T because, again, there's a lot of iterations before. So Ford Model A through S.
Okay.
Some were just prototypes. Other did actually go to production. But the Ford Model T was the one that it was the first one where the pieces of the assembly line and how the fabrication of the car work was able to come together for the first time. First, the Model T was introduced in 1908. It was the cheapest that it was $825. And so today that's about $22,000. So like pretty similar to what you'd pay for like a Honda, yeah. Something like that now.
Yeah.
So there's a very famous quote that I love and I don't even have to pull it up. So I hope I don't butcher it, but he was asked about like the colors of the car because it came notoriously in black. And he said, the Ford Model T can come in whatever color you want it to be, as long as that color is black. So I always thought that was funny. He also owned an airplane company.
Interesting.
So going into World War II, this is apparently a pretty common thing to do, was to switch over from the automobile industry into the aviation because of the war.
Okay.
So he acquired a company named Stout Metal Airplane Company, and his most successful aircraft was the Ford 4AT tri-motor, often called the Tin Goose.
Okay.
So if you have a picture of it pulled up, and it looks very much like an old style, like if you ever saw Casablanca,
right.
Kind of that style plane in it. A few other things that are accredited to Henry Ford that are just, again, really cool. So he introduced the 40-hour work week as we know it.
Okay,
so
interesting.
Yeah, so before it was a 48-hour, 6-day-a-week, and he basically came in and said more productivity would happen with this amount of work. So
yeah.
Switched it down to 40 hours, and he was actually pretty ahead of his time in a lot of these things. So he actually doubled the salary of the current employee for the time. So at the time, do you want to guess the current salary?
$1,500.
Year?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a little high. So I have the statistic for hours. So $2.50 was the hourly rate.
Oh, wow.
Rate.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and he doubled it to $5 an hour,
wow.
Which I think broke up into $8.25 a year or something like that. So the reasoning behind that is there's a lot of turnover rate with just like the lowly wage. And so his thought was if you doubled what they pay, you would get more loyalty in your, with your workforce. And I think to the effect it worked out really well for him.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So there were a few controversies in his life.
Right.
He was always kind of seen in like as an anti-Semitic, which is interesting because he had a reputation of being one of the few major corporations to hire black workers, as well as women and handicapped men.
Huh.
So, but very against Jews, like,
yeah.
And so a lot of this kind of came out in different ways. He wrote a pamphlet that whenever someone bought a car, this pamphlet would go in the car, and it was called The International Jew and like the Problem with Jewish
wow.
People.
Interesting.
Mein Kampf, Henry Ford is one of the only like doted upon Americans in that book.
Interesting.
Which is not the best thing.
No.
In the world, so.
If you want to be written about, I think you could choose pretty much any other book than Mein Kampf.
Almost any other book, yes.
Yeah.
He was awarded on his 75th birthday the Grand Cross of the German Eagle, which is the highest medal that a Nazi Germany could bestow upon a foreigner.
Okay.
So none of this looks good, but
nope.
It does get better.
Okay.
He did write a letter and come out with an apology to the Jews and just like, sorry for like the, basically his actions and whatnot. And it was taken pretty well, actually. Like most of the Jews who would write into him responded really well and felt that his apology, you know, was accepted and whatnot. And so this is a little thing that I read. And so he later on again battled with strokes, and that's kind of like what led to his death later on in life.
Yeah.
And so a man named Robert Lacey wrote in Ford, The Man and the Machines, that he was shown a newsreel footage of a Nazi concentration camp, yeah, and, quote, was confronted with the atrocities which finally and unanswerably laid bare the bestiality of the prejudice in which he contributed. He collapsed with a stroke, his last and most serious. And so a lot of people see that directly correlating with his death later on.
Interesting.
Was very just interesting. Kind of the shock to the system of that. So he was 83 at the time. So I think that that's a reasonable thing to assume there. So
interesting.
Aside from that, though, I mean, Ford is one of the most probably prolific reasons why we are. I mean, he's changed the nation.
Like, yeah.
This is the world.
With the Western world and advanced countries with the, not necessarily industrial revolution, but like the mass production kind of factory, economic mentality that we have in the West. I think you're right.
For sure. So yeah, tall order this week.
Yeah. Okay. So that's Henry Ford. I have just a couple of Henry Fords I want to mention briefly, as always, some that aren't going to get a full kind of biography, but wanted to mention. There's a Henry Parker Ford who was born in 1837. He lived till 1905. And so he was, sort of a contemporary of Henry Ford of Ford Motors. He'd been a little bit older, but he was the mayor of Pittsburgh from 1896 to 1899, which is really interesting. He was an accountant that found success. He was the founder of the city's Department of Bridges, and Pittsburgh later on gained the nickname, and sometimes goes by the nickname, the City of Bridges. They claim to have more bridges than any city outside of Venice. And so he did a couple of fun things. He created the Pittsburgh Police Department's Bicycle Patrol in 1896, and he created the first water filtration in the city. So Henry Ford, the mayor of Pittsburgh, did some cool stuff for that city. There are a couple of Henry Ford football players, actually, American football. There was a defensive lineman that was born in Fort Worth, Texas. Yay, Texas. Go, Texas. Rock on. Hook 'em. Okay, fair enough. So he was a defensive lineman. He played for the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Oilers / Tennessee Titans and played 1 year for the Saints. He was drafted in the first round of the 94 NFL draft by he was leaving the University of Arkansas and was drafted by the Oilers. He made it as a substitute on a Super Bowl appearing team in 1999, but they lost to the St. Louis Rams, led by Kurt Warner. So that was one Henry Ford, who was a football player. The other one was a little bit earlier in time. He was born in 1931, but his nickname actually was Model T. He went by Model T was his nickname because obviously his name was Henry Ford. He played defensive back for the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was drafted in 1955 by Cleveland. But before that, a little bit of an interesting connection here, he played in college at the University of Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh mayor was Henry Ford, much earlier, but anyway, we have a Pittsburgh connection there. Henry Model T Ford was the first African American to play quarterback at a major college. So kind of an interesting legacy there, even though he went on to play defensively professionally. But he spent a couple seasons with the Browns, with the Steelers. He was awarded the Pittsburgh Pro Football Hall of Fame's President's Award in 2015 for displaying superior courage, integrity, and professionalism beyond the playing field. So he's 86 years old, still kicking, and has a cool legacy in terms of American football. So those are some lesser known, but still, I think, cool and important Henry Fords.
Okay, I love that. But who I really want to talk about is Henry Justice Ford. So this person was pretty cool.
And has a dope name. Henry Justice Ford. Let's rock and roll.
Honestly, Justice is a solid name all the way through. Yeah. So an English artist and illustrator. Lived from 1860 to 1941, so right before the start of the Second World War. Yeah. Again, these two Fords could have known each other.
Maybe.
Very possible. Became first known for his illustrations of the fairy books by Andrew Lang. Do you know what the fairy books are?
No, and I'm an English major and love like fairy tales, fairy stories. I love like children's folk tales. I think they're really, really interesting, but never heard of the fairy tales.
Well, these are pretty cool. They are, so it's not like his all original, obviously, but he collected a lot of these stories into a series of books called the fairy books. I mean, honestly, a lot of these stories, there's Rumpelstiltskin, yeah, Red Riding Hood, Sleeping Beauty, Aladdin stories are in there, from some of the Arabian Nights stories are in there. And so he basically compiled and collected a lot of these stories, some with accreditation, others not so much. They do go on to say that some of these were not the best, like, accredited. And so he's... but Andrew Lang himself was a Scots poet, novelist, and literary critic. And so he compiled all these together, and I think his wife actually has this quote of saying, he's best recognized for the works that he did not write.
Funny.
Which I always thought was kind of an interesting line. So.
And inside take, right? If anybody knows, it's his wife, and she's spilling his secrets to the world.
I wonder if it's easy to feel pride with your work when your wife is always like, well, that's nice, but like, you didn't make it. It's
but
like
you
showing
stole
someone
that.
Else's artwork. Like, hey, I have this. Like, yeah, but you didn't do...
I think it's Picasso or somebody who talks about how all great art is stolen, right? Like, you never know art is original, something like that. I feel like that's a quote that's been attributed to lots of what people talk about. If you do great art, you are going to steal from somebody at some point. It's inevitable.
Fair enough. That's fair. He also designed the costume for Peter Pan, the character of Peter Pan, for his first, when he was first introduced on stage.
Interesting.
Yeah. So just kind of like, prolific guy as far as the arts. Well-known friend of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I like that guy a lot. Also, a strange tidbit about him. He, at the age of 61, married a woman 35 years younger than
him. Wow. Way to go, Henry IV.
Yeah. I feel like, again, this is something that we've, in the last episode, also mentioned some of this. So, again, different times.
Different time, different era. And he must have had just a wonderful personality, too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in my head, he might have been this rock star of a person.
Was like, super cool. Friends with Arthur Conan Doyle. Yeah. Maybe had a hand in Sherlock. Designed Peter Pan. Has affected, the image of this little elf boy.
Yeah.
For generations.
Yeah.
Maybe, whatever Peter Pan is. We don't know.
It's imagination.
Yeah, oh, that's right. Pixie dust. He's had an impact on all of our lives, I think. So he's probably stellar.
Plus, his name's Justice, so she was probably swayed by that.
That's true. Yeah, it's hard to not be just entranced by a man whose middle name is Justice.
Yeah, so Henry Justice Ford. Kind of a neat guy.
Okay, excellent. That's awesome. And he was an illustrator, you said, in England. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I would also love to talk about Henry Ford. This Henry Ford is interesting because his name's not Henry. His name is Edmund Briscoe Ford, but he went by Henry. So
Briscoe?
Edmund Briscoe. But he went by Henry, so he is a Henry Ford. He was born in 1901. He lived until 1988, but he was another British man. He was an ecological geneticist. And his whole career was based in Oxford. He had a degree in classics, actually, originally, and then turned to zoology and read some of that, and then was taught genetics by a man named Julian Huxley. And this man kind of inspired Henry Ford to pursue genetics and the idea of zoology and genetics for a career. So he was appointed to Oxford in 1927 and eventually in 1933 became a lecturer. He was kind of the director of the genetics laboratory, so the head of the genetics department essentially in the 50s and 60s, and eventually became the professor of ecological genetics once he invented that field of study. Usually it's a mixture of field and laboratory studies. You might take samples of the natural population back to a lab to study for, the genetic variation and changes in populations at different times. But essentially, Henry Ford was the first guy to say, like, let's go do this, like, out in nature itself. Let's go study these differences in the phenotypes of animals, the differences and things that show up out in the field in nature. So he worked for a lot of years on genetic polymorphism, which I had to research and learn just now. So I have about 10 minutes of study in genetic polymorphism. Okay. So whatever I say that's incorrect or simplified too much, if you have a science degree, if you know more about zoology than I do, please send in a note. We can do a correction here. But essentially, basically what genetic polymorphism is there are two two distinct types of a certain trait within the same population, within the same kind of species, that aren't necessarily better or worse as far as like animal survivability traits. The idea here is like, and that it's not on a spectrum. So it's not like height or hair color where you might have hair that's more blonde or more brown, or you might be taller or shorter. It is like the idea of having, so earlobes that are attached or unattached, right? It's either is or it isn't. And there's not necessarily a genetic benefit to that. It's just a difference. And so there's a woman wrote on this study and basically said like, it's garbage, it's trash. Reading through it doesn't have any conclusion. So there's a little bit of a controversy here in this specific study and what it meant, what it actually revealed. However, none of that really takes away from Edmund Briscoe, quote unquote, Henry Ford's work in revealing this new field of study, and also the work that he did practically in the field, kind of merging his like childhood fascination with moths and with insects into his academic pursuits as a ecological geneticist and as a studying this genetic polymorphism. So he wrote lots of books, lots and lots of books. As far as his personal life goes, he was never married. He didn't have any children. Lots of his friends considered him, it says, decidedly eccentric. So kind of an interesting guy. Although they said that his eccentricity was more prominent when he knew he had an audience. And so
he liked to egg it on.
Probably playing it up. Which I feel that. I get that.
Hey, I'm improv. That's what we do.
It says that he was fond of slightly surrealist practical joking. So it sounds like he pulled pranks on people, even as a professor. But he was a very, very generous man. It was a kind of an open secret. He made this contribution at one point in the way of a grant of £350,000. To establish a unit of medical genetics at the University of Liverpool. And that was to some friends of his that were trying to start that. So he's generous, kind of a quirky dude, but he has this kind of long-lasting impact on the study of genetics, specifically genetics as they play out in the natural world. So really interesting, I think really cool. Again, I've talked a couple times on the podcast about the idea of taking a field of study and kind of adding to human knowledge in that one kind of area. So it was a concept that was introduced to me when I was in college by a guy named Phil Grayesky, who is a brilliant. He's doing a lot of really good work right now, but he talked about what it is to go into academics and take one small corner of human knowledge and expand it that much. And if we're all doing that, then the idea of the whole of human knowledge is expanding more and more, which I think is a cool, kind of a cool idea. So anyway, that's E.B. Edmund Briscoe Henry Ford.
Okay, that's cool. I mean, I feel like I know a lot about what he does. I'm still curious of why he decided to go by Henry.
Right, I know. And I can't figure it out. Actually, the Wikipedia talks about how there really aren't that many sources of information on his personal life. It says non-academic information on his life is hard to come by, mostly consisting of scattered remarks made by colleagues. So that's E.B. Ford. I will say there's one controversy here too. He actually campaigned strenuously against the admission of female fellows into All Souls College. So there's a little bit of he was a man of his time in that era and didn't want women to be involved in science. Although there were a couple of female scientists with whom he was on good terms, but a little bit of a controversy there as well.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just wanted to stop and mention if you or someone you know shares a name with a famous person, we'd love to know. You can reach out to us on inawcast@gmail.com. That's inawcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching inawcast. Like, share, subscribe. Really, anything helps us get our podcast out there. So please tell your friends, review, and enjoy the rest of the episode. Okay, so I've got another one who I'm gonna kind of keep it in the family. So Henry Ford. He had some sons and he had some grandsons. So I want to talk about one of his grandsons, Henry Ford II.
Okay.
Henry Ford II was born in 1917. So that would have been right after World War I.
Yep.
Yes. So born in Detroit, Michigan. And we didn't say
this. Right, toward the end of World War
One. Yeah. So Detroit, Michigan is 1918. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So Detroit, Michigan is where Ford was founded at. Right. So born there. His father Edsel Ford became the president of Ford Company. He died of cancer in 1943 during World War II. And so Henry Ford, he was currently serving at the Navy, so he couldn't take over the family's business. But he served as president of Ford Motor Company from 1945 until 1960 and as chairman and CEO for several months after.
Okay.
Notably for during his time, so Henry Ford did a lot and basically his son just kind of increased to it. And so he is the one who made Ford Motor Company a publicly traded company.
Okay.
The company's fortunes under his rules, they did fluctuate a lot. So for example, when he did go public with the company in 1956, raised $650 million for the company.
Wow. Okay.
Really good. Of that $65 million, half of it was lost from a program for the experimental car that they had instituted during his father's campaign. And so he kind of kept running it, and it cost them a lot of money.
Okay.
But again, so this goes back and forth. He also hired the creator Lee LaCocca. Lee LaCocca is one of the reasons of the success of the Ford Mustang.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
yes.
Cool.
Okay, so we all know what the Ford Mustang is and how it looks. So they, but later fired the same man, fired Lee LaCocca due to personal disputes. And so, yeah, so, and that was just out of the fact that they didn't like each other.
Interesting.
Basically is what it comes down to.
Personal problems.
Yeah, personal problems. So, more on Ford, he, you know, there's like, this is kind of a transition in the company of like building cars in America as opposed to like building, like taking in other parts of cars. So he was very fervent about always keeping it in the American market. He said would never put a, like a Japanese style engine, which was becoming popular, would never let one of those be under a car with his name on it.
Okay.
I think he did well as far as like giving to the culture, and the, but again, it's funny, like the phrase of like big shoes to fill comes into mind really quickly here. And
I mean,
then,
enormous shoes to
enormous,
fill.
Enormous, and you
shoes
know,
that are kind of impossible to fill unless you laid your whole
basically.
Body down in them, right?
Yes, they're exactly.
Giant so shoes.
It's sad that like unfortunately a lot of the things that he did for the company. Probably, you know, and the fact that his name is also Henry Ford, like, it's kind of a double whammy on the, like, you're not going to be the one that people remember.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's sort of like going back to when we did Michael Jordan at first, the Michael Jordan basketball player that wasn't, you know, our Michael Jordan, the Michael Hakeem Jordan. You got to know what you're getting into whenever you enter an industry where there is someone who has literally reshaped the way that we think about that industry or that profession, and you've got the same name as them, so you're asking for it at that point.
That's true. And what it's funny, I'm actually reading this book about the Guinness family.
Okay.
And so one thing I've noticed heavily in it is like it's passing through family and generations, and it's almost always there is a it's Albert Guinness, and there's always like it's the next Albert Guinness. It's the next, and it's so it's I don't understand that. I guess like the paternal names are so strong of like, I'm gonna name you my name, you know. It's, again, I'm probably gonna name my kid Adam West. Like I've had pretty good success with it, so I'll probably name him Adam West.
Well, and he'll have this podcast to really prepare him for a life of being associated with someone more famous than him.
We'll pass the mantle on to him.
Yeah, that's good. That's awesome.
Yeah, so.
Cool. Okay, so that's Henry Ford II, still the car guy. Great. I've got one final Henry Ford to talk about just briefly, and then we'll wrap things up. So I want to talk about Henry Ford, who also was an Oxford professor. So funnily enough, both of the Henry Fords I want to talk to were professors at Oxford. This Henry Ford was a little bit earlier than the Henry Ford I talked about. He was born around 1753, and then he actually died in 1813 on July 26, which as of the time of this recording is tomorrow. So tomorrow is his anniversary of his death. Yeah. So he was at the University of Oxford. He held the positions of the Lord Almoner's Professor of Arabic. And then he was eventually became the principal of Magdalen Hall in Oxford. So for those of you that don't know, and I'm not, this isn't a super detailed, this is kind of off the cuff, but Oxford is basically made up of several different colleges that make up the University of Oxford. And so he was the principal of Magdalen Hall, one of the colleges at Oxford. So he was from Kent in England, and he joined the University of Oxford on July 9th, 1776. So America declares its independence on a Thursday. On a Tuesday, he's matriculating at Oxford. So I'm assuming I don't know how fast news traveled until then. I'm assuming he wouldn't have known at that point.
Probably not.
But I wonder if that was something that he associated. It was like, okay, that same week later on, he would know that as America's Independence Day. So right after he obtained his degree in 1780, so 4 years later, he was appointed the Lord Almoner's Professor of Arabic. So he gets his degree and right away gets a job there teaching Arabic. And so the Lord Almoner's Professor of Arabic basically is, it was endowed to teach Arabic, but also was sometimes used to teach Hebrew. And it was actually that was discontinued whenever the guy holding the chair retired in 1909. So it doesn't exist anymore. He was not the only candidate for that job. Even he was young, it wasn't the only candidate. There was another guy named William Jones, who was a lawyer and a linguist who applied for that job. But that guy had a reputation as a radical, and basically what we learn is that although Henry Ford was quote-unquote a comparative non-entity, which William Jones, the guy who's competing for, his biographer called Henry Ford a comparative non-entity. So basically said this guy's nothing, which at the end of the day,
nice way of saying
a very nice way of saying that. But this guy who's doing a biography of William Jones, he's got some skin in the game. So who knows if he's necessarily a trustworthy narrator there. But Ford, Henry Ford, had the advantage of having married the niece of a bishop. And so because he was married to the bishop's niece, this guy says that nepotism in politics triumphed. So basically, I mean, it kind of makes sense. He just got his degree. Maybe he wasn't necessarily the most qualified, but you know, it's not about the grades you make. It's the hands you shake, right, Adam?
Not the first time we've come across that. Probably won't be the last.
Will not be the last, guaranteed. So from there, he obtained his Master of Arts degree in 1783. And then when the principal of Magdalen Hall, a man named Matthew Lamb, retired in 1788, Ford became his successor and then became the principal. He got another doctorate in civil law. But then after that, he, quote unquote, retired as much as he could from the public view. In addition to these positions at Oxford, he was an ordained priest in the Church of England, and he had a couple of different positions in the church given to him by his wife's uncle, John Butler, who is the Bishop of Hereford. So I think in a lot of ways, maybe Henry Ford was placed into positions by his wife's uncle. There was maybe more than one case of nepotism going on here. Like I said, he died on July 26th in 1813, buried in Hereford Cathedral. He has a memorial there even today, and then he was succeeded in his positions. But he had two sons, he had a daughter, and in his obituary, which you can actually read in a magazine called The Gentleman's Magazine, it talks about how he passed away, but it says that to great and varied acquirements in general science, he added a profound knowledge of Oriental literature. In his professional and public character, he was an eminent example of unaffected piety, gentleness, and benevolence. And in his private life, he was no less amiable for his communicative and friendly disposition than excellent as an affectionate husband and tender father. So, regardless of, you know, whether or not he was kind of given these positions, regardless of the fact that he was pretty shy, it sounds like, I mean, in an obituary, you know, it can be, they're always going to be positive. Like, you're not going to want to speak ill of the dead. But sounds like, at least to some people, he was known in a positive light and held in pretty high regard. That as a man, he was gentle and easy to be around. And that it sounds like he did good work in the University of Oxford. So that is Henry Ford, the Oxford professor.
Okay, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah,
he seems like a hard guy to get to know, honestly, with the way you're describing him. Like, yeah, you couldn't go and pick your brain.
Yeah.
Pick his brain, you know.
Yeah. But he sounds very much professorly, right?
Oh, like, yes.
Probably pretty bookish, studied Arabic, taught Arabic, was the professor, I mean, was the president of principal of one of the colleges at Oxford. And so exactly the kind of guy you probably want to be teaching.
For sure. Okay. Well, I have to ask, what do you think? How do these Henry Ford stack up?
Yeah. Honestly, Adam, after listening to these, after reading through them, I don't know that any of them really even come close in my brain to Henry Ford, the of Ford Motors. Like, I don't know that any of them necessarily have a lasting impact, even within their field. I think definitely they do have a lasting impact, but I don't know that one that overshadows or trumps or deserves to be talked about or kind of in the public mind more than the Henry Ford that we know. And so typically I like want to try to give some of these guys the benefit of the doubt. That's why we've looked at these. But as far as this Henry Ford goes, what Henry Ford of Ford Motors did for manufacturing in the industry, even just like the American business, the way that we operate business-wise, a 40-hour work week and things like that, I think that Henry Ford, I mean, he deserves his place in our kind of recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say. I mean, I didn't want to say that at the beginning of the episode, but yes, I mean, we, you know, when your name is branded on, you know, so many million cars around the world,
yeah,
like there's no way that you're not the most well-known.
Yeah, and
so like deservingly so. And so even with like, and to see just like the, your testament, you know, is still around basically. Yeah. And so, yeah, I agree. It's Ford, it's Henry Ford all the way. So, but yeah, I do have some interesting facts.
Yeah, go for
about,
it.
Henry Ford and the company that I thought were interesting. So apparently Henry Ford and Thomas Edison were really close friends.
Interesting.
Upon our quest, Edison's son captured his father's last breath and sealed it in a tube. And I don't know if he like gave it to Henry Ford, but like that was, it's just like something that he did. He captured.
That's weird though.
That's super
like a strange.
Weird. Yeah.
Well, what a strange like request or thing to think of. Yeah. Or,
and to ask your own son, like, hey.
I saved my breath.
Saved my.
This is it.
This is it.
Catch it quick.
What if he catched the second to last?
Well, what if he didn't know? What if he was like, catch it. Oh shoot, wait, this is it. Is that, was that,
just
that,
like
is that
really
it?
Yeah. Long. It's like, I don't know if it's all in here.
Yeah, who knows? That's weird. Funny.
Yeah.
Interesting, but strange.
Ford Company was, the Ford Motor Company was also known as the first green company.
Oh, okay.
Back before 1939, Ford factories were powered on mostly burning both human and animal manure. And
okay.
This is probably because horses were so prevalently yeah. used at this point that there was probably horse manure everywhere.
Probably made for some stinky
oh,
offices,
man. Don't
though.
Know if I'd want to work in there. So, last one, the first ever monster truck, the legendary Bigfoot,
oh.
was a Ford vehicle.
That's right on.
Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
It's interesting. Okay, cool. So that's all I have for that.
Cool.
So, you got anything else, Davis?
I don't think so. I enjoyed reading about these guys. I enjoyed learning more about Henry Ford just because, I mean, the Henry Ford we all know, he's so impactful. Getting to see a little bit more into who he is has been interesting, and I think there are some interesting other Henry Fords out there.
We'd like to thank Broke for Free for letting us use their song Luminous. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.